Well, I want to thank Dave and Bernadine for inviting us to speak. This is a little bit different than the earlier talks you've heard because I'm going to give about half the talk and then Jeff's going to pick it up and save it. So that's the plan for this particular talk. So we're going to talk about Southern Highbush Blueberry. So I'll tell you right up front that the title is a little misleading because we don't really have a lot of data on nutrient assimilation other than nitrogen and iron. And the blueberry industry in Florida, as you already know, is based on southern highbush. These are hybrids between northern highbush and several wild species that are native to the southeast United States, including these three as well as some others. Our soils are very sandy where we grow our blueberries, and they're typically high pH. Our irrigation water is high in calcium, also high pH, and so they're not ideal soils at all to grow blueberries in. And we actually refer to them more as mineral soils, where other crops would grow quite well. And so we have to add a lot of organic matter, and the organic matter that we add is pine bark. We add quite a lot of pine bark per acre. It's one of the major establishment costs as well as maintenance costs for our blueberry industry. Pine bark increases the organic matter. It decreases the soil pH, which, is, as you know, is required for blueberry. It maintains nitrogen primarily in the ammonium form. As you know, once you start to get into pHs above about 6.0, you increase your nitrification rates, and so you lose your ammoniacal nitrogen. It increases iron availability, as you saw from Marvin's slide, where under lower pHs, iron becomes more available. But as I've already said, it greatly increases establishment costs. And unlike these higher pH mineral soils that you would find most crops grown on, the nitrogen form and the increased iron availability differ in this kind of system. So the question that we've been asking ourselves for quite a while, not just in southern highbush, but in northern highbush as well, is why do high pH mineral soils reduce growth of cultivated blueberry? And so we've been looking at this from the perspective of whether it's a nitrogen and iron issue because of the availability issue at those higher pHs. And so this is some work that we did a while ago looking at so all of the work I'm going to present is done in different hydroponic systems, either a nutrient solution or sand hydroponics. And so this is looking at straight ammonium versus straight nitrate effects on growth. This is, again, southern highbush. We've got ammonium on the left, nitrate on the right, and you can just visually see the differences in growth after several weeks, probably 15 or 16 weeks in hydroponics. This is looking at the dry weight gain under those two nitrogen sources, and you can see that plant, leaf, and stem dry weights are significantly increased with ammonium versus nitrate. No surprise to anybody who grows blueberry. We looked at uptake rates of ammonium versus nitrate using N15, and you can see that this is a relatively short-term experiment, so all we did was we challenged the plant with either N15 ammonium or N15 nitrate, and we looked at nitrate uptake during every 6 hours for about 36 hours, and what you can see is that the rate of ammonium uptake is quite a bit higher than the rate of nitrate uptake, as you would expect based on the fact that they prefer ammonium, if you will, over nitrate nitrogen. And the rate of uptake decreases in both situations simply because we're depleting the N15 out of our hydroponic system. So that's the only reason that's happening. Nitrate reduction is very limited in blueberry. And so So of all of that nitrate nitrogen that's being taken up, if we look at the amount or the percent of that that's actually reduced and therefore becomes available to the plant, because the plant can't use nitrate, it must reduce it. And so if we look at the amount of from that nitrate that's taken up, the amount that's actually reduced, you can see that it's actually a very small percent of the total amount of nitrate that's taken up. The rest of that nitrate is being stored in the vacuoles, and it's not available for plant growth. And this is the enzyme that's responsible for that reduction, nitrate reductase. Nitrate is taken up, but there's various plasma membrane transporters that take nitrate up, but nitrate is taken up by an active mechanism. And then in the cytoplasm is where you find nitrate reductase enzyme. It reduces nitrate to nitrite. That nitrite then is then further reduced to ammonium. The enzyme that does that reduction is constitutive, so it's always present. Nitrate reductase is an inducible enzyme. And then that ammonium is assimilated into amino acids and ultimately proteins. And so nitrate reductase is considered to be the rate-limiting step to nitrate uptake and assimilation in plants and is often correlated with yield. What we find with the blueberry, unlike other horticultural crops, is that the nitrate reductase activity is quite low. And so in the roots, you can see that it's, at least in some experiments, the activity of nitrate reductase is lower than certainly strawberry and apple, and I could have listed a whole range of other fruit crops as well that show the same thing. Probably, or perhaps even more important, is there is no nitrate reductase activity present in leaves. We've looked at every species of blueberry that we could get our hands on, and we have never found any nitrate reductase activity in the leaves of blueberry, as opposed to the very high levels that you see in these other crops. In terms of iron, that's the other major nutrient that we're looking at in terms of trying to answer the question of why blueberries don't grow well on high pH soils. Is it because of lack of iron? And you can see on the left-hand side is, this is, again, southern high bush, grown without iron, exhibiting typical iron deficiency symptoms versus grown with iron. Iron uptake is done by FCR, ferric chelate reductase. This is a plasma membrane-bound enzyme. Fe3+ is the form. It's chelated in the soil. It's chelated in our hydroponic system. And but the form that the plant takes up is the Fe2+ form, and I think Marvin mentioned this. And so what this enzyme does is it cleaves the chelate off and simultaneously reduces the ferric form to the ferrous form, and then there's a channel protein that takes the ferrous form up into the cytoplasm of the cell. If the roots are going to use that iron, then it uses it as the ferrous form. However, if that iron is going to be transported anywhere else in the plant, it has to be reoxidized and rechelated and translocated that way. And it's usually typically rechelated with citric acid. And so in order to translocate that iron anywhere else in the plant, it's going to be reoxidized to the ferric form, chelated, and translocated that way. And so based on this, we began to do sort of a survey of a bunch of different vaccinium species to see if we could identify any species that did well on these higher pH soils where nitrate would be the predominant nitrogen form, iron might be less available, organic matter might be relatively lower than what we need in our cultivated blueberry. In other words, trying to find a vaccinium species that would grow well on these mineral soils, where this very expensive, at least in Florida, these very expensive soil amendments would not be needed. So we found Vaccinium arboreum, the sparkleberry. This is native to the southeast U.S. It's a very small tree-like plant, has a monopodial growth habit, has a very deep root system relative to what we see in the cultivated blueberry. It tolerates very low organic matter and is found in soils that are typically pH 6.5 or even higher, up to 6.8 and 7.0 in some cases. And under those types of pHs, nitrogen is going to be primarily in the nitrate form, and iron availability is going to be decreased compared to what we see for cultivated blueberry soil requirement. So we've been looking at nitrate and iron assimilation in arboreum versus southern highbush blueberry. All the data I'm about to show you now are data from our latest experiment, and although it shows the same types of patterns that we've seen in the past, I'll be honest with you and tell you I haven't had a chance to look at these data very much. We just ended this experiment last week. But this is looking at root NRA. We've stopped assaying for leaf NRA completely because it's just not there. And so this is weeks after treatment, and you can see that arboreum or sparkleberry is in the blue, southern highbush is in the red, and you can see that there's significantly greater nitrate reductase activity in the roots of the arboreum compared to the southern highbush, as we've already talked about. And this is correlated with increased nitrate uptake. And so if we look at uptake, and this is micromoles of nitrate per gram fresh weight per week, and so it's normalized for plant size, we can see that uptake of nitrate in arboreum exceeds that in southern highbush throughout the entire experimental period. We also have recently begun to look at pH effects on both nitrate reductase activity and nitrate uptake, and this is what we see in the experiment that we've just completed. We had two pHs, 4.5 and 7.0. The hydroponic system was buffered at those pHs. And what you can see is that in terms of nitrate reductase activity, in general, for both pHs, the activity was higher in the arboreum compared to the southern highbush. We did get this blip at 6 weeks after treatment where we got this tremendous increase in activity in arboreum against this root in arboreum compared to southern highbush. But in general, I think the story is just that regardless of pH, the activity of that enzyme is higher in arboreum than it is in southern highbush. And if we look at then the pH effects on nitrate uptake, this is what we see. Vaccinium arboreum at pH 7 has much greater rates of nitrate uptake compared to Vaccinium arboreum at the lower pH, and then certainly compared to the southern highbush at either pHs. Again, supporting the idea that that we find these arboreum growing naturally on these higher pH, very mineral type soils. We've also, as I said, been looking at ferric chelate reductase activity, the enzyme responsible for reducing iron and then allowing it to be taken up by the plant. And again, you can see that Vaccinium arboreum in our system has significantly greater activity of that enzyme. This is in the roots, again. Has much greater activity of that enzyme compared to the southern highbush. We have looked at ferric chelate reductase activity in the leaves as well. So this is looking at ferric chelate reductase in the roots, and again, it correlates very nicely with uptake of iron in the root system. And so, again, arboreum has much greater uptake rates than southern highbush throughout the entire treatment period. If we look at pH effects on FCR, what we see is at lower pHs, the ferric chelate reductase activity is very similar between arboreum and southern highbush. However, once we get to pH 7, you can see that the activity of the arboreum is quite a bit higher than it is in the southern highbush. Again, supporting the idea that these arboreum grow much better under higher pH than do the southern highbush, and that it may be related to increased iron availability. And again, I went backwards. And again, if we look at the pH effects on iron uptake, we can see significantly increased uptake rates in Vaccinium arboreum at the higher pHs relative to southern highbush at the higher pH, and then relative to both of them at the lower pH. So we get increased uptake of the iron at higher pHs, particularly in Vaccinium arboreum. As I said, iron has to be re-chelated and reoxidized as it's translocated to the rest of the plant if it's not going to be used in the roots where it's being taken up. And so, as I said, it's re-chelated with citrate, it's translocated in the xylem to the leaves, and then once it gets into the leaves, it must be, the same thing has to happen. So there is a leaf plasma membrane located ferric chelate reductase that has to remove the chelate, reduce the ferric form to the ferrous form, and then there's another ion channel protein that takes that allows that ferrous form to move into the cytoplasm for use by the plant. And so we've done some work looking at leaf ferric chelate reductase activity. I'm not showing you the data, but what we find in general is higher activities of this enzyme in leaves of arboreum as well as we did with roots. So we see that higher levels not only in roots but also in leaves. And this goes back to this idea that Marvin mentioned of looking at leaf nutrient concentrations. And so most of you are probably familiar with this idea of the iron paradox. And so what that means is that you're walking out in your blueberry field and you've got leaves that are clearly iron deficient, and so you take your leaf sample and you send them off to the lab and they come back and iron is sufficient. And so what the heck is going on? Well, that's where, as Marvin mentioned, you have to differentiate between total iron versus active iron. And so if you look at total iron in our two species here, there's no difference. Obviously, in the leaves, we've got a lot of variability going on because 50 isn't different than 100, okay? But nonetheless, statistically, they're not different. If we extract active iron, and by active iron, what, and so nobody really can define active iron, but the way we, what we assume is that this is the iron that has been reduced by the ferric chelate reductase to the ferrous form and is in the cytoplasm and is available for use. And so if you look at the active iron, what you see is that the active iron concentrations are significantly higher in Vaccinium arboreum organs compared to the southern highbush, in the roots and the leaves and the stems. And so this may explain this, at least partially, this iron paradox. So total iron doesn't do it. You need to be looking at active iron probably. So nitrate, and so what we show consistently in our hydroponics experiments is that nitrate and iron uptake and assimilation in arboreum are greater than in southern highbush blueberry. And so then the question is this why Vaccinium arboreum is better adapted to these higher pH mineral soils than our southern highbush blueberry? And this is Jeff's cue to run up here and tell you the rest of the story. I think this is Jeff's cue. Yes, it is.
Okay. So we wanted to see if we could duplicate some of the results that Rebecca just mentioned to you that were done in hydroponics and see if we could do that in the field. And to do that, we developed a couple of experiments that I'm going to briefly cover today, where we used two southern highbush cultivars, Farthing and Meadowlark, and we either grew them on their own roots in a traditional manner or we grafted them on the Vaccinium arboreum. And then we had two different soil types. We had the pine bark amended soil, which is the standard for blueberry production in Florida. And then we had just a natural soil that had no amendment at all. We had two experimental sites. One was on a commercial farm in Archer, Florida, in Alachua County. The other was at our plant science research and education unit in Marion County, just about 20, 25 miles south of the other experiment, a little bit east. So what we're trying to do here is see if we could use Vaccinium arboreum as a rootstock to increase the adaptability of the southern high bush to the non-amended soil conditions that we have in Florida, and see if these differences in growth that we might observe, if we can correlate that back to nutrient uptake and assimilation. So first I want to briefly describe the experiment and some of the growth responses that we got in terms of plant size and yield, and then I want to talk a little bit about leaf nutrient concentrations. So the plantings were established in 2011. This is the commercial, the planting on the commercial farm in Archer. And then later that year, that was actually planted in March of 2011. Then in May of 2011, we planted a planting. These are obviously older plants, but this is the planting at the Plant Science and Research and Education Unit in Citra, Florida. So this is what the plants, at least what Meadowlark looks like on its own roots on your right and grafted on the left. When the plants were in their second full season of growth, so they probably had about a year and a half of growth there. If we look at canopy volumes at the end of 2014, so that would be after two complete growing seasons, you can see that the on-rooted and the amended soil for Farthing on the left was larger than any of the other treatments. There were no differences, in fact, among the other three treatments. If we look at Meadowlark, again, the on-rooted plants outperformed on amended soil, outperformed the on-rooted on non-amended soils, but the grafted plants were not different. Regardless of the soil type, the grafted plants were not different from the standard on-rooted amended soil. This is after about 2 years of growth. That was the site in Marion County. If we look at the site on the commercial farm in Archer, it's a little more complicated, but similar in the sense that the on-rooted standard on-rooted on amended soil for Farthing had the largest canopy, then the grafted on amended soil was next, and then the plants, whether grafted or on-rooted in the non-amended soil, were the smallest. If we look at meadowlark, the on-rooted on amended soil and the grafted on amended soil were the largest, and they were not different. The grafted on non-amended soil was smaller, but it was significantly larger than the on-rooted on non-amended soil, kind of showing an advantage of the arboreum as a rootstock on a non-amended soil. And this graph just looks at change in size or canopy volume during the 2013 growing season. So these data were collected in early 2014 before growth began. And what I want to point out here is for both farthing and meadowlark, the grafted plants increased in size significantly more than their on-rooted counterparts. So if we look at yield follows the same pattern as canopy volume pretty closely. For farthing at the research site, the on-rooted on amended soil out-yielded the first season. 2013 was really the first production season. They were in their second year, but it was their first production season, and they out-yielded all the other treatments. Same thing at Archer on the commercial farm. The on-rooted on amended soil out-yielded all the other treatments. If we look at the next year at the research site, I'm only going to talk about the main effects here because there were no interactions between root type and soil type. There was no difference in yield for farthing, whether the plants were on-rooted or grafted. And for meadowlark, the grafted plants actually yielded more than the on-rooted plants. And in the amended soil versus non-amended soil, in both cases, production was higher in the amended soil. At the Archer site, there was a treatment by soil interaction. So we're looking at the interactions here. On-rooted amended soil produced the most for farthing, followed by grafted on amended soil, and then grafted on non-amended soil produced more than on-rooted on non-amended soil. For meadowlark, similar trend, on-rooted on amended soil outproduced the other treatments. The grafted on non-amended soil and the grafted on amended soil were not different, but they were greater than the on-rooted on non-amended soil. So during the course of the experiment in 2013, our acid injection system went offline and we didn't realize it immediately. So we ran into a situation where the pH in the field, this was at the Archer site, drifted up quite high. So here we're looking at a photograph that was taken in the fall of 2013 when the soil pH was 6. And on the left, you have the on-rooted plants. These are farthing, looking very poor, stunted, chlorotic, not looking good at all. And the grafted plants on the arboreum rootstock doing reasonably well under those high soil pH conditions. And, of course, the difference in chlorophyll content was significant. Same thing with the meadowlark in that field. We saw quite a dramatic difference in the overall appearance of the plant size, the chlorosis, the dieback, you name it, between the grafted meadowlarks versus the on-rooted meadowlarks at that high soil pH. So we have since taken that field and divided it, and we're leaving part of it in the high pH state and bringing the pH back down to where we want it in the other half. So we can follow that a little more detail over time. Now, what about those visual symptoms and the differences in growth between the grafted plants on the on the amended and non-amended soil? We're trying to relate that back to nutrient content, and there aren't a lot of real clear patterns, but what I've done here is I've highlighted where there were statistical differences for farthing and meadowlark, whether they were grafted or on-rooted. This was in the first year, 2013. You see that nitrogen for farthing was a little higher, still kind of low, though, than the on-rooted plants. Potassium also a little bit higher, but not that much, even though it's significant statistically. And zinc was a little bit higher, but again, not the magnitude of the difference wasn't that great. For meadowlark, we saw a difference in potassium, not a big difference though, and in zinc. In the second year at Archer, the results were somewhat different. Notice calcium though, because calcium was something that where we saw fairly consistently at all our sampling dates, not all of them, but most of them, we saw where the grafted plants took up less calcium or had lower calcium concentrations in the leaves than the on-rooted plants. And that was fairly consistent for both varieties and at multiple sampling dates. The other effects here, zinc again, a little bit higher in the grafted plants, but not a whole lot in terms of the magnitude of the difference. Now, at the research center, where we had a little bit better control over things, these were the differences that we got. A difference in nitrogen, but not a great difference. A difference in phosphorus uptake for both variety, or both farthing and meadowlark. Potassium, a little greater uptake, not that much. But again, calcium, less calcium taken up by the grafted plants for both farthing and meadowlark. Iron, which we were hoping to see or trying to see if we could duplicate the hydroponic effects, we really weren't able to do that consistently. Boron, you see, on-rooted, a little bit higher, sort of following a trend similar to calcium. So what can we conclude from all this? Well, in controlled hydroponic experiments, Vaccinium arboreum takes up and assimilates iron and nitrate more efficiently than southern highbush. These differences seem to be magnified at higher pH values. But when we tried to duplicate this in the field, the grafted plants did have increased growth and yield on non-amended soils compared to their on-rooted counterparts, but we couldn't really see a consistent correlation between their growth and their performance in the field and leaf nitrogen or iron. The thing we did notice was leaf calcium seemed to be lower, consistently lower in the grafted plants compared to the on-rooted plants. And that's it. I think I'm about out of time, but so is Bruno. Bruno's here. The student in charge of the field study is Bruno Casamali, and he's here. Raise your hand, Bruno. So, okay. Thank you.